when all else fails, turn on the recorder. We're going to be looking today at the story of Absalom that begins in 2 Samuel 13. Absalom, in your bulletins, I gave you a kind of cheat sheet out of Wikipedia because I loved how it says, Absalom was David's third son, born at Hebron, moved at an early age with the transfer to the capital, to Jerusalem, where he spent most of his life. He was a great favorite of his father. Who else was a great favorite of his father? And Esau. Remember Esau? He was a great favorite of his father and of the people as well. His charming manners, his personal beauty, his insinuating ways, together with his love of pomp and royal pretensions, captivated the hearts of the people from the beginning. He lived in great style, drove in a magnificent chariot, and had 50 men run before him, basically announcing, "I'm coming." Okay. So, if the word humility is in the same sentence with Absalom as the subject, somebody doesn't know what they're talking about. Okay, so basically, spoiled little rich kid, modern day idiom, and he is going to basically take what he wants. That's kind of the mindset that is inbred in him. And the first thing that he decides that he wants is his half-sister, who happens to be, yes? Amnon wanted the half-sister. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Amnon wants his half-sister. Absalom is going to kill Amnon. I'm sorry. If that was confusing. I knew what I was talking about. Yes. They're both, yes. Okay, so when we look at this story, Amnon basically ends up raping his half-sister, which the text is very clear. Amnon lay down, pretended to be ill. The king came to him. "Please let my sister Tamar come and make a couple of cakes, and that, you know, that she could bring to me. You know, I'm feeling sick." And so she does that. Amnon says, "Send everyone out of the room." Everyone went out. Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the chamber so that I may eat from your hand." When she brought him near to eat, he took hold of her. He said, "Come lie with me, my sister." She said, "No, my brother, do not force me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do anything so vile. How could I carry my shame? I beg you." He wouldn't listen to her. Being stronger than she, he forced her and lay with her. Okay? So, the result of that is that her presence in his sight is going to remind him of all of this. Okay? He decides the best way to deal with this is to send her away into exile. Okay? And she goes to live with Absalom. Okay? She's there for 2 years. You can imagine Absalom knew all the gory details of what happened. Yes?
You might want to point out the relationship between Absalom.
Absalom
and Tamar. They are full brothers.
They are full brothers and sisters, whereas Amnon and Tamar are half brothers and sisters. Okay? So, not that it made it right either way. Okay? But the text is very interesting, and one of the things that I want you to see is that in the Old Testament, in addition to things like the commandments of Moses and the stories in Leviticus that have all sorts of law codes. Many of these kind of stories have moralisms. They have moral instructions. Okay? So we get one of those in verse 15. Amnon was seized with a very great loathing for her. Indeed, his loathing was even greater than the lust he had for her. Okay? So every once in a while, when you're reading the Old Testament, you'll get those little kind of, we just want to make sure you understand what the motivations are here. Okay? Put the women out of my presence, bolt the door after her. She was wearing a long robe with sleeves. This is how the virgin daughters of the king were clothed in earlier times. His servant put her out, bolted the door after her. She put ashes on her head. Okay, please notice, she is the victim, but she is bearing signs of repentance. Okay? Not defilement, repentance. Put ashes on her head, tore the long robe that she was wearing. She put her hand on her head, went out crying aloud as she went. Absalom, okay, catches word of this. He provides refuge for his full sister. Absalom said to her, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you?" Okay, I have a feeling there are some snitches among the court servants who have kind of let her know exactly what's going on. Tamar remained a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house. When King David heard of all these things, he became very angry, but he would not punish his son Absalom. Amnon. Sorry about that. I would have given them different names. He would not punish his son Amnon. Okay. So, again, what the writer is doing, okay, is he's not just telling you the story, but kind of like Garrison Keillor, he's dropping a crumb that he's going to come back and revisit. Because David is going to be judged harshly toward the end of his life exactly for this piece, for not coming down harder on Amnon. And what he should have done to Amnon is what? According to Leviticus, he should have killed him. Exactly. But why isn't David going to kill him? He's next in line for the throne of succession. Okay? Now this, in and of itself, okay, we would think would remove him from that. But David's going to kind of look the other way. Okay? Tamar ends up staying with Absalom for 2 years. And during that time, I'm sure they had lots of talks about forgiveness and how we need to let this go. And no, they stayed up late at night and thought, how is revenge going to happen? Yes.
So it's very clear that in that society that the woman is shunned and the man is still the leader. Is that what you're saying?
President Clinton, who? I'm not sure I caught your question. No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And again, okay, but the piece that I want to make sure that you get in the story is a part of Tamar's public penance. I mean, her public act of contrition is what happens if she gets pregnant. There is a memorable event to look back on that she can recall.
Question. I mean, she offered Amnon a dubious, but at least a chance to make her, you know, for an honorable outcome to this. If he would just ask King David for her. I'm not sure the laws would allow David to give her to her, but
it would not.
spotted leaf. Yeah. But Amnon is a selfish beast.
Yeah.
Some people lock the door.
Yeah.
I
think there was a notch on his belt. Anyway, Amnon pressed him until he let Amnon and all the kings. So the next part of the story is Absalom has this huge party, and he invites all the king's sons. Now, we don't know exactly how many there were, okay? But things obviously got pretty, shall we say, raucous, okay, at this party. Because the servants come back and they tell David that, I mean, first of all, he's suspicious. Why do you want Amnon to come to this party? You know, Absalom's like kind of making double sure that Amnon is going to be there. The servants come back and they say to the king, oh yeah, by the way, all your sons are dead. He ends up finding out that's not the case. Okay, this is a very convoluted story. Okay. See in verse 30, while they were on their way, the report came to David that Absalom had killed all the king's sons and not one of them was left. You're going to find out that's not true. The report is false. King arose, tore his garments, lay on the ground. All his servants who were standing by tore their garments. They are in mourning with the king. But Jonadab, the son of David's brother Shimeah, said, let not my lord suppose they've killed all the young men, the king's sons. Amnon alone is dead. This has been determined by Absalom from the day that Amnon raped his sister Tamar. Oh, so the secret's out. Apparently more than just the three know about it. Okay? So now this has kind of publicly been disclosed to the king. Okay? He may not have done anything about... David may not have done anything about Amnon up to this point, but now word is circulating. Jonadab said to the king, see, the king's sons have come. As your servant said, so it has come about. As soon as he finished speaking, the king's sons arrived. They'd all gone out on horseback. Arrived, raised their voices, and wept. The king and all his servants also wept very bitterly. Why? They are thrilled. Everybody's not dead. Okay? But Absalom fled. Okay? Words of this kind of assassination party get back to David. Now we're going to find Absalom going into hiding, where he stays for 3 years. Even when he comes to Jerusalem, he does not go and visit his father, does not see him anything. He is running. He's afraid. He is, and please notice the commonality in this story with the Jacob and Esau story, where Esau's running, you know, running away, or excuse me, Joseph is running away from Esau. Okay? So many similarities in the two stories. And the heart of the king went out yearning for Absalom, for he was now consoled over the death of Amnon. What's David's agenda? Now that Amnon's dead, Absalom will be the next king. Okay? He's not ever kind of going, oh, how about Solomon? Okay? Is Bathsheba so out of the inner circle that she doesn't have any influence? You'll find out later. She does still have a lot of influence. So Absalom comes back to Jerusalem 3 years later. And again, there's no great happy reunion. Joab, son of Zeruiah, perceived the king's mind was on Absalom. Joab sent to Tekoa and brought from there a wise woman. He said to her, pretend to be a mourner. Put on mourning garments. Do not anoint yourself with oil. Behave like a woman who has been mourning many days for the dead. Go to the king and speak to him as follows. And Joab put these words in her mouth. This is a professional mourner. They had them then. They still have them. Okay. When the woman of Tekoa came to the king, she goes into this whole long involved story. And basically the upshot of the story is she's trying to get David to have mercy on Absalom and to not bring vengeance upon him for the death of Amnon. It's kind of one of those, oh, you are the man kind of stories, not quite as forceful. The king answered the woman, "Do not withhold anything from me, I ask you." The woman said, "Let my lord the king speak." The king said, "Is the hand of Joab with you in all this? As surely as you live, my lord the king, one cannot turn right or left without anything that the Lord..." I mean, she is buttering him up like there's no tomorrow. "In order to change the course of affairs, your servant Joab did this. But my Lord has wisdom, like the wisdom of the angel of God, to know all things that are on the earth." You know, I'm getting nauseated. You know, it's so bad. King said to Joab, "Very well, I will grant this. Go, bring back the young man Absalom." Joab prostrated himself with his face to the ground, did obeisance, blessed the king. Joab said, "Today your servant knows that I found favor in..." This whole thing is a setup. This is a manipulated setup to force David publicly to vindicate Absalom. Okay? So, of course, David's going to forgive him. "In all of Israel, there was no one to be praised as much for his beauty as Absalom." Can we forget he raped his half-sister for just a minute?
Amnon raped his half-sister.
My apologies.
Poor Absalom's getting such a lousy reputation.
Okay.
Now, the fact that he's a snot, but
he is. Okay. Amnon's the scum. Okay. "No one to be praised for his beauty as Absalom." I guess David had good genes. That's all we can say. "From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. When he cut the hair of his head..." Oh, gee, doesn't that bring to mind somebody else? Samson, of course. "Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence." Okay, now, I want to tell you, if you are the son of the king, and you live for 2 years in a village... that city that is smaller in geographical area than from here to McDonald's. I want you to get the picture here, okay? Somebody's going out of their way to avoid each other, okay? Because the walled city of Jerusalem during the time of David is not that big a place. Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but Joab wouldn't come. He sent a second time, Joab wouldn't come. Then he said to his servant, "Look, Joab's field is next to mine. He has barley there. Go, set it on fire." So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Joab arose, went to Absalom at his house, and said to him, "Why did your servant set my field on fire?" Absalom answered, "Look, I sent word to you. Come here that I may send you to the king with a question. Why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me to still be there. Now, let me go into the king's presence. If there is guilt in me, let him kill me." That's what he's expecting. Then Joab went to the king, told him. He summoned Absalom. He came to the king, prostrated himself with his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. We almost want to say, "And he killed the fatted calf," and, you know, the story goes on. He's forgiven. Completely forgiven. After this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses, 50 men. I mean, he's out of hiding. Now I'm back to the spectacles. 50 men to run ahead of him. Absalom used to rise early, stand beside the road into the gate. When anyone brought a suit before the king for judgment, Absalom would call out and say, "From what city are you?" When the person said, "Your servant is of such and such a tribe in Israel," Absalom would say, "See, your claims are good and right, but there is no one disputed by the king to hear deputed. It's a funny word. It's where we get deputation from, but it looks weird. Deputy. It just looks funny, doesn't it? Deputed by the king to hear you. Absalom said, "Moreover, if only I were judge in the land, then all who had a suitor case might come to me." What's he doing? He's advertising. He's basically saying, "You know, don't bother David with this. I can hear this. I'm the king's son." Okay. What Absalom is doing is he's trying to make himself the most popular one at the Republican debate. Okay. He's trying to kind of get his name out there to get recognized, all this sort of stuff. Because ultimately what Absalom is pushing for is to get himself anointed. Okay? Please don't think that this is all out of the goodness of his heart. Thus Absalom did to every Israelite who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the people of Israel. Okay? "Oh, you know, I'm here at the gate. Why don't I just go ahead and hear your problem? You know, I'll judge. I'll make a determination for you." And at the end of 4 years, notice how much time is passing here. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go to Hebron, pay the vow that I've made to the Lord. For your servant made a vow while I lived at Geshur in Aram. If the Lord will indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will worship the Lord in Hebron." okay. There's still, you know, is the Ark of the Covenant still at Hebron? Is he talking about a different God? You know, there's a lot of uncertainty about what this means. 200 men from Jerusalem went with Absalom. They were invited guests. They went in their innocence, knowing nothing of the matter. When Absalom was offering the sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel, the president's advisor, okay, the kind of chief of staff, the Gilonite, David's counselor from the city of Geloh. The conspiracy grew in strength, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. See, I'm involving as many people in kind of his agenda. It gets so bad that David has to leave Jerusalem. And one of the things we talked briefly when we were looking at the Ark of the Covenant, but in this story, David takes the ark with him. Okay, it's kind of like, I got God on my side. See, verse 24, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God, they set down the Ark of God till all the people had passed out of the city. Carry the ark back into the city if I find favor with the eyes of the Lord. David goes up, went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives. Okay, now remember, just curiously, this is the same road that Jesus is going to descend, walking from the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem. There's one road, okay? Weeping as he went, with his head covered and walking barefoot, all the people who were with him covered their heads and went up, weeping as they went. David was told that Ahithophel was among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, "O Lord, I pray you, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness." David ultimately sends a spy to go figure out what Ahithophel is doing. In 2 Samuel 16, he gets just over the hill, and who meets him? Do you remember the lame boy who was dropped? Mephibosheth? Okay. He's just kind of over the crest of the hill with Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of donkeys saddling, carrying 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 summer fruits, one skin of wine. The king said to Ziba, "What are these for?" "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride, the bread and the summer fruit for the young man to eat. Wine is for those who drink, who faint in the wilderness." And where is your master? Where is Mephibosheth? Remember David had made a covenant that he would watch out, and remember he brought him into his house. Where's Mephibosheth? He remains in Jerusalem, for he said, "Today the house of Israel will give me back my grandfather's kingdom." The king said to Ziba, "All that belonged to Mephibosheth is now yours." Ziba said, "I do obey, since let me find favor in your sight, my lord the king." This is all well and good. Okay? This is getting... It's a lie? Of course it is. Okay? It's a lie because why? David had sent the spy, so he really knows what's going on. And this story gets very long and convoluted. Ahithophel, who's kind of the chief of staff, Absalom, all the Israelites came to Jerusalem. Ahithophel was with him. So Ahithophel has shifted from being with David, and now he is advising Absalom. Okay? When that happens, when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, he said to him, "Long live the king, long live the king." Absalom said to him, "Is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did not you not go with your friend?" Hushai said to Absalom, "No, but the one whom the Lord and his people and all Israelites have chosen, his I will be, and with him I will remain. Moreover, whom should I serve? Should it not be his son? Just as I served your father, so will I serve you." Then Absalom said, "Give us your counsel. What shall we do?" He says back to Absalom, "Go into your father's concubines, the one he has left to look after the house. All Israel will hear that you have made yourself odious to your father, and the hands of all who are with you will be strengthened." They pitched a tent for Absalom under the roof. Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. Not a good thing to do. He has also now violated the Levitical covenants. You cannot sleep with your father's wife or concubines. Okay? Should have known that. And then to do it publicly. That's exactly what Nathan said he would do, and that's going to ultimately help bring about his death. Ahithophel says to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men. I will set out and pursue David tonight." What's he going to do? He's not going to bring war on the Moabites or the Gerashites. He's going to bring war on David. Okay. So David has his army. Absalom has his army. Does anybody see a problem here? They're the same army. Right? I mean, Absalom hasn't been able to get his whole army. So what's going to ultimately end up happening is the soldiers are going to have to figure out, are we going to fight for David or are we going to fight for Absalom? From whom are we going to take orders? "I will come upon him while he is weary and discouraged, throw him into a panic, and all the people who are with him will flee. I will strike down only the king. I will bring all the people back to you as a bride comes to her husband. You seek the life only one man, and all the people will be at peace." the advice pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Unfortunately, it's going to be advice that will also bring about their death. I'm going to skip down. Okay. Basically, what happens, David gathers his army, and when he gathers his army, the people who have covenanted agree to serve and fight for David, and he gathers all of them together. The army that Absalom is able to gather together is very few in number. Okay? David mustered the men who were with him, set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. It is estimated that the army of Israel at this time is about 15,000 people. That's outside of these sources, the Bible sources. David divided the army into three groups, one-third under the command of Joab, one-third under the command of Abishai. The king said, I myself will go out with you. The men said, you shall not go out, for if we flee, they will not care about us. If half of us die, they won't care about us. Okay. This should again be bringing to mind Esau and Jacob meeting at the Jabbok. And remember, Jacob divides half of his household and half of his livestock and half of his wealth. Well, if they kill half of them, I've still got the other half left. Okay, these are Old Testament devices that, did it happen exactly this way? Probably, but it also helps if you can bring back the kind of storyline from other biblical stories. The king ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. All the people heard that the king gave orders to the commanders concerning Absalom. So what he had done is he had shown severe cruelty to Uriah. Now he has issued the opposite to show extreme mercy on Absalom. The army goes out into the field against Israel, and the battle is fought in the forest of Ephraim. The men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the slaughter was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest claimed more victims that day than the sword. Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. This gets to kind of a weird and funny part of the story. Absalom was riding on his mule. The mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, and his head caught fast in the branches. Okay? Now, there's actually a funny commercial on TV. I think it's a Geico commercial or something, but they show a guy riding off into the sunset, and he hits the end letters and falls off his horse. Okay? You kind of get the imagery of this story that Absalom is riding the mule and his head gets caught in the branches and the mule just keeps walking. So Absalom's there dangling. Now, why he can't get himself out of the tree, not real sure. But what's going to happen is some of David's soldiers are going to come up, surround him, and they are going to kill him. Okay? Presumably, while he's still dangling in the tree. Okay?
Maybe go with his long hair to tell you why he can't get his hair untangled.
Okay. See? He should have had a haircut. I can tell him where to go. Anyway, 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. Then Joab sounded the trumpet. The troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained the troops. They took Absalom, threw him into a great pit in the forest, raised over him a very great heap of stones. Meanwhile, all the Israelites fled to their homes. Absalom in his lifetime has taken and set for himself a pillar that is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar by his own name. It is called Absalom's monument to this day. So David hears about Absalom's death. Okay, so look what's happened. Okay, we no longer have Amnon. We no longer have Absalom. David's getting older. He's got to figure out who's kind of coming next in line. David hears about Absalom's death. David was sitting between the two gates. The sentinel went up to the roof of the gate. He looked up, saw a man running alone. He shouted, he's got news. Let him come. He cried out to the king, all is well. He prostrated himself before the king with his face to the ground. Blessed be the Lord your God who has delivered up the man who raised their hand against my lord the king. The king said, is it well with the young man Absalom? It was not uncommon for you to kill someone who bore bad news. That's why people always ask, is it okay if I speak? Is it well? Well, yeah, until we see that you're not going to chop my head off. The king said, turn aside, stand here. The Cushite came. The Cushite said, good tidings for my lord the king. The Lord has vindicated you this day, delivering you from the power of all who rose up against you. Well, that's the good news. The war is over. Now here comes the bad news. May the enemies of my lord and all who rise up against you do you harm. Be like that young man. The king was deeply moved, went up to the chamber over the gate, wept as he went. One of the great quotes out of David, oh my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, oh Absalom, my son, my son. I will tell you, the first child that I buried as a priest, these were the words of the father. It was devastating. Chapter 19, okay, the king's mourning, weeping, etc. King is grieving for his son. Troops steal into the city that day as soldiers steal in who are ashamed when they flee in battle. The king covered his face. The king cried out with a loud voice, oh, my son Absalom, Absalom, my son, my son. What's the problem with the soldiers who are sneaking back into the city? They're afraid if they hear, if the king hears, they were the ones who killed Absalom. They're next. Joab came into the house of the king and said, today you've covered with shame the faces of all your officers who have saved your life today, the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives and your concubines, for love of those who hate you and for hatred of those who love you. You made it clear today that commanders and officers are nothing to you. For I perceive that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, that you would be pleased. So, go out at once, speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night. And this will be worse for you than any disaster that has come upon you from your youth until this day. You got damage control. You better get the heck out now, or your army's going to desert you. Now, I'm sorry I don't have the map up here. Okay, but you remember there was Jerusalem, and right below it was Hebron. Okay, just over here are the Moabites, and they are chomping at the bit to come in and overthrow David. He's got to have an army ready for dispatch, ready to defend Jerusalem. He's got to get over Absalom's death as quickly as he possibly can, or they realize that the united monarchy of Israel and Judah is in jeopardy. Meanwhile, the Israelites had fled to their homes. All the people were disputing throughout all the tribes of Israel. The king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines. Now he's fled out of the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. What are they concerned about? If we supported Absalom's kingship, that might come back to haunt us. Because David is still king. Now therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing the king back? King sent his message to the priests Zadok and Abiathar, saying to the elders of Judah, why should you be last to bring the king back to his house? The talk of all Israel has come to the king. You are my kin, you are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? They ultimately do end up coming back. He shows mercy to the scribe. He meets Mephibosheth. Remember that he is sworn to take care of? Well, he's kind of not been doing that for a while. Mephibosheth, grandson of Saul, came down to meet the king. He had not taken care of his feet or trimmed his beard or washed his clothes from the day the king left until the day he came back in safety. When he came from Jerusalem to meet the king said, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? Okay. Don't you think that's the wrong question? The question should be, David, why didn't you take me with you? Okay. He answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me, all that sort of stuff. He shows kindness to Barzillai, who had been fairly a minor player. And we get down to David has several fights throughout chapters 19, 20, 21 with the Ammonites, with the Moabites. The Philistines again come at war against Israel in chapter 21, 22. And then David does something very interesting in 2 Samuel. We have a psalm that he had written, a psalm of thanksgiving for God's victory with him in battle. And that shows up in its entirety in 2 Samuel. So one of the great Bible trivia are all the psalms of David written in the book of Psalms? The answer is no. Okay? We get down to what we think is going to be the death of David with, now the last words of David are, but then you find out these aren't the last words of David. And then it goes through, names a whole bunch of warriors. What's happening, and the piece that I want you to see in the big picture, is after the Bathsheba affair, David's influence is severely limited. While in his early kingship from the death of Goliath until the Bathsheba event, we have him able to rally people, to get people on their side, all that sort of stuff. That significant moral collapse finds his effectiveness greatly reduced, both as a military commander, a political leader, all of those things. There was division in his army, next week we'll deal with the death of David, his burial, and we got to stop there.